IRS and others. I think it's time the people take the country back through their representative government.
To KHENLP FM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community-supported radio. And we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they're available at www.givemesometruth.info or linked from the khen.org website. And if you'd like to send an email into the program for questions with our guest, our email address is khen.dj@gmail.com, khen.dj@gmail.com. And again, I'm Melody, and my co-host tonight is Shannon Hemingway. And you just listened to Poker Face playing Revolution. And the opinions expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And support for KHEN and Truth Quest is brought to you by Kevin Barnes, agent for Land Property Incorporated's Little River Ranch, offering beautiful land home packages with underground utilities and river access just 3 miles from historic downtown Salida. Find out more at coloradohomeproperties.com or call Kevin at 719-207-0858. And tonight, my guest is David Merlin. And he's an activist who uses litigation and public record to deter abuse and to correct misuse of authority. With a vast knowledge of the tax code and the IRS, he's eager to press the Department of Justice into certain corners which seem to leave the government speechless. Priding himself in having nothing in common with the anti-tax movement, his collection of affirmative challenges really show how protective the tax code actually is. In addition, David has developed a set of strategies for litigation against government and almost any mode of enforcement. A certain methodology that the private individual can use has proven many times that over knowing what the cop's job is and that of the prosecutor and the judge yields many opportunities to make them pay for abusing the system in their official power. We know that public servants all too often drag the wrong person into court, and the person who's done nothing wrong. Well, all too often, those who know how David litigates are able to get their judge off their case and to get their cop off their cop to back off to get their case dismissed. The unlikely sources of relief are available in our system of justice are amazing when you've seen them in action. Distinguished from all others in the field of tax law research and application, David Merlin, without peers, and his methods in litigation, civil and criminal, are designed to cause every opponent pain and discomfort. A unique offensive approach to public servants and their abuses has been gleaned from years of experience and David's willingness to take on any controversy in court. David, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, David.
Your voice is very soft. If you have a volume adjustment for my end,
okay.
It would help me.
All right, let's see here if I can... Whoops. It feels like there's something feeding back.
You have a very pleasant voice. This is my first time meeting with Melody.
Yeah, and I'm feeling like there's something in here feeding back.
She asked me to join her show tonight, and it's my pleasure to be here. My name is David Merlin. For starters, I have a ton of free stuff on the web. For the highlights, get ready to write jurisinformatics.com. Jurisinformatics.com. You'll find an expose on tax code and right to travel the way I do it. There's an audio seminar on every page. Just click on play and you'll have a streaming audio narration describing what you'll see on the pages. So a wonderful website that I put up in December. I have a curriculum about tax law, my analysis of the tax code, which was complete in 1993 at tocongress.com, tocongress.com. If you want to see right to travel my way, go to publicvehiculartravel.com. I got the .com. I got there first with this. Public vehicular travel is in the law from coast to coast as a right. It's everywhere in the law, not case law. This is about statute and county ordinance. So there's a whole bunch that we can talk about tonight. Did you find a volume knob?
You're still not hearing me, huh?
Oh, there you are.
Okay.
A little bit better.
Okay, maybe I just have to just get right up to the mic here.
So thanks for this invitation.
Well, I'm glad that you accepted my invitation because I actually had heard about you back about 2000, actually.
Oh, yeah. I was working with gifting clubs.
Yeah, that's what I heard from you.
I have the only documented victory by gifting club members in the entire United States where over 8 months of litigation, I coached hay farmers and truck drivers on how to photocopy, sign, file, and serve and argue the pleadings I wrote in their case that was brought by the Attorney General of Oregon, Hardy Meyer.
That's quite a feat because I know that quite a few people ended up getting litigated.
Everybody.
Yeah.
I'm 5-for-6 against the State Attorney General of Oregon, former Prosecutor of the Year, former Speaker of the House of Representatives of Oregon. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Nice job.
Hi, Hardy. Hi. This is Dave. I think it was September 1st of 2001 I got that judgment for those, that dismissal for those gifters. That was a great day. Got some justice. Can you believe it?
Well, the word got around. That's for sure.
Not enough of it because there's a lot more gifters could have done. Go to federal district court for a declaratory judgment that they're exercising constitutional rights. Federal court, one federal court order in their favor, and it covers 50 states when they abide by the policy that is ran by the court to get the judgment. And the course the courses that I offer are very inexpensive. You'll see those on jurisinformatics.com. Course number one is about my 33 states analysis of their pyramid scheme statutes, comparing them to the policies of gifting clubs to show that they never really violated the law in any of these states. The pyramid scheme statutes do not describe their conduct. And this is course number one because it answers the question, how do I know if I'm guilty or whether they're just abusing their authority? And you look at statute. As I looked at statute, you see a total analysis of 33 different states' pyramid scheme statutes. It's where you start with law. That's why it's course number one.
Interesting, because, you know, I mean, I'd looked at that law myself, and it seemed like they were definitely pushing it on trying to enforce.
This is a really good time for me to say that to everybody, nothing you'll ever hear me say is intended as legal advice. Anything that sounds like that to you, please consider it something somebody else might do in a galaxy far, far away where the law indeed matters. It doesn't matter here. They have the guns. In fact, all this is satire, really. I pull the cork. I'm famous for Billingsgate. I saw that word on Jeopardy one night in the language column. It was a question about English, and it contained the word Billingsgate and London. So I'm a smart guy. I never heard of Billingsgate. I wanted to know what that means, so I reached for my Oxford English Dictionary. And Billingsgate is a fish market in London, which is famous for the fact that its vendors swear all day. Point where Billingsgate, in some circles, foul language is called Billingsgate. So I finally chose a title. I hate authority. If I wanted it, I have it by now. But I'm David Merlin, vituperator for hire, barrister of Billingsgate. If you have something filthy to say to a public servant, I'll tell them for you. And I'm not constrained by religion, and I very much respect conservative values. I grew up with all sisters, you know, and I like women's rights, and I hate what's happening to them under this ghetto standard that the children are learning. Its proliferation through the ranks of youth is ugly. And so anyway, I like conservative values, but I'm willing to open my mouth, whereas nice, tame folks, I very much admire their ability to maintain their poise and not get angry, but I'm so close to the fight that I got to say something. And so I abuse my servants like soda machines that won't give me my Pepsi. I kick them till I get what I want. And I can describe a couple. I mean, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I got my first traffic ticket in years. I've been driving without everything for years. And you want to get into traffic?
Yes.
Right to travel?
Please.
Oh, okay. Again, this is not legal advice. Now, let's start with 18 U.S.C. 4. That's a statute. The United States Code, Title 18, is on crimes. Section 4 is called misprision of felony. That means concealment of felony. If I know of a felony committed on the federal level and I don't report it, I've committed a crime. And I'm required to report it to some judge or a military or civilian authority. That's what I do. I write affidavits that report crime to state or federal authorities. I write on par or better than the DOJ. My education came from reading case law. I've read upwards of 4,000 cases, mostly federal, supreme, and appellate cases. When you read case law, it's constitution concentrate. And to see the language of judges, rendering judgment, I don't argue, I conclude. And when I write a brief, I'm in their face with conclusions they can't refute. And I'm not nice about it. I club them with the facts. Now, 3 years ago, and you'll see this on the Motor Vehicle Code page in jurisinformatics.com, there's an audio seminar for every page. It's wonderful. You don't have to read everything to know what I'm doing. 3 years ago, March 9th of 06, I filed a particular affidavit because a few months prior, I revisited a traffic court brief that they run from, victory after victory after victory on this traffic brief, which is argues statute. I don't rely on a bunch of case law, even though there's hordes of it. that says right to travel. I don't rely on case law. I rely on statute. And I read this brief like 10 times. What are they running from? What? And one phrase kept standing out to me solely because of all the case law I've read. I could spot an artful phrase. This was in Chapter 1, Section 1X of the Highway Licenses Act of 1961, a Sessions Law, Washington State, defining highway as any way, lane, street, road, boulevard, or other surface open as a matter of right to public vehicular travel. That phrase kept, every time through the brief, that phrase grabbed me. Open as a matter of right to public vehicular travel. I typed it into Google. I got 464,000 hits. I felt like I hit three cherries on a one-armed bandit. Okay, I'm sincere. It convinced me it's a racketeering scheme. I have this right. They convinced me I don't, so they can get my money through a privilege code. And I gathered all of my evidence together and enhanced my memorandum with statutes and ordinances from across the United States. And I got most of the protections here in Washington State out of all of them, where I live. I'm out of the Seattle area. The Attorney General's reports and a Washington State Supreme Court case from 1935, Neely versus Bach. One paragraph, it says, this ordinance obviously applies to streets within incorporated cities and towns because streets within incorporated cities and towns are open as a matter of right for the purposes of public vehicular travel. Our Supreme Court. Now, who did I send this complaint to? It's a federal felony. I named the governor, the director of licensing. I wanted to name one of everybody in the chain of misenforcement, so if you got a traffic ticket in your state, you could find provisions in your state and join your cop, your prosecutor, your judge, to the counts where I charged my cop, prosecutor, and judge in my complaint, so you don't have to write another complaint. You just write a joinder to my complaint saying, I got these guys, they're similarly situated. I want to join them to that. They're involved in the same crimes Dave reported in March of 06. So I filed this with the the Homeland Security Committee and the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice, that seems like a natural. But the Homeland Security Committee, why? Because David Reichert is one of the defendants to this criminal complaint that I wrote. I named the governor, the director of licensing, three sheriffs for the most populous counties here in Washington State, and I named a city. I named a cop, a judge, a private prosecuting law firm that hires out to the city, a public prosecutor, and a cop on the street. So no matter who's acting against you under the Motor Vehicle Code, you can join them to counts I already articulated in my complaint, and I have this writing ability. So you exploit my writing ability by simply joining my complaint with an affidavit. That's all it is. It's not a lawsuit, and it's not an indictment. I don't have that authority, but I'm required to complain about law, and this is the style I choose to do it in. And I named David Reichert as a defendant. He was a rookie member on the Homeland Security Committee. When I filed this, he was King County Sheriff here in Washington misenforcing the Motor Vehicle Code against public vehicular travelers. The reason I did this, I wanted to climb to the top of government with my allegations to see if they would defend a congressman and prove me wrong. I've never received a word from them. A year later, 2 years ago, Redmond, I live in Redmond, a few blocks outside of Kirkland, neighboring municipalities. 2 years ago, Redmond police put a notice on my windshield, a courtesy notice they called it, saying, better move this abandoned vehicle or we're going to tow it in 24 hours. I called them. It was a Sunday evening. I thanked them for the fact a human answered the phone. And I told them, tell the officer that posted this. I've moved my car one space. I use it every day. It's not abandoned. It's just my vile neighbors jerking your chain. And the next day, I wrote a notice up to them attaching this 37-page memorandum with a 16-page RICO complaint. You'll see it for free on jurisinformatics.com on the Motor Vehicle Code page, and you'll see a link for, it'll say, proof. I serve this on the local cops, and I drive without. Click on that, and there will be the audio seminar. You can click again. It'll open up a Microsoft Word document that the audio seminar describes. I sent that to the Redmond cops. saying, first off, it's not abandoned. Thank you. Secondly, I have this right to travel. Your notice invokes the Motor Vehicle Code. And if you talk to me about the Motor Vehicle Code, it's felonious and have the right to arrest a felon with any necessary force. I don't like County Judge Peter Nault, and he enforces the traffic code, and I'll arrest him if you bother me again. And I've never seen a Redmond cop since, and I drive without. They didn't tell Kirkland, the neighboring city. This is Bill Gates' backyard, okay? Redmond didn't tell Kirkland of the problems they could be in. So May 7th, Kirkland finally pulls me over, just a month ago. And I'm sitting in the parking lot, and the cop circles. It goes through the rows of parking looking for expired tabs, whatnot, and running plates in random inspections on the computer there. And they saw me, and I didn't move my head at all. And I'm wearing sunglasses, and I'm just sitting in my car. It's off, and I'm listening to talk radio. And the cop drives around my my parking island and stops because she never came back into my peripheral vision. And I knew, okay, it's up. And so I listened to talk radio for about 10 more minutes, started up my car and left the parking lot, and I'm driving north on 132nd, the street that divides Kirkland from Redmond. Kirkland is on your left as you're facing north. Redmond is on your right. You're in Kirkland on 132nd. If you take a right, you're not. You're in Redmond. I know because I've already gotten a ticket dismissed for that very fact. It was like 6 years ago, 7 years ago. Now, these are city police. It's a city court they directed me to respond to. City, city, city. Very important. It saves me from even having to argue right to travel. And you listen to the way I own their bacon under state law. I promise you. I terrified them with what I told them they did to me. Now, city cops followed me out of their city to cite me. There's a state law that allows neighboring municipalities to enter into agreements to enforce each other's criminal codes. For instance, if I'm a Kirkland police officer and I'm in Redmond and I witness a crime, I can act under the criminal code of Redmond to arrest the offender. It doesn't extend to civil enforcement. If they're outside of Kirkland and they don't cite me criminally and they cite me civilly instead, it's official misconduct, a gross misdemeanor. So the lights come on in the car, and I turn right on a side street 100 feet and stop my car. I'm in a different jurisdiction. They only had criminal enforcement authority. Now, these two, the city cop comes up to the window, she, and says, your papers, please. And I say, here's my ID. She goes, you don't have a license. I said, I don't have insurance. I don't have a license. I don't have plates, and I'm not getting them. And she goes, give me backup. And another officer arrives on scene. And after some discussion, I told her, listen, we better not talk until you're on the stand. And I'll tell you what, when you're on the stand, you're going to be reading Neely versus Bach to me, where it says, this street right here, and I pointed out at the street, it says, this is open as a matter of right. We're not going to talk till you're reading to me on the witness stand, because you're dangerous. Because she said, I told her, you know, state law says I can arrest a felon. She says, is that what you're going to do? I said, no, that's what the legislature allows me to do. And they just wouldn't listen. They went back to the car and they wrote me up a ticket, $1,224 worth of fines. And this is where it gets interesting. They didn't cite me with city code. They cited me with state statute. They have no enforcement authority for state statute. So three fines on one ticket, those are three gross misdemeanors. I haven't argued right to travel yet. If they commit a felony in Washington State, the statute of limitations is 10 years for a public servant's felony. Hudson versus Michigan, 2006, Supreme Court, if you're making an arrest, you don't have to knock. RCW 9A.16.020, if I witness a felony or learn of one, I have acquired the right to arrest that felon with any necessary force and deliver them to a competent public servant to receive them into custody. So if they commit a felony, I've just obtained the right to stand at their bedside at the moment of my choosing sometime in the next 10 years without a knock and take them away with any necessary force to the sheriff. I want to ring that felony bell, don't I? So So here they are. They cited me with three state laws, and they have no authority to do so. Their past tickets are going to reflect that they intended to cite me with state law. So they pulled me over with the intent to commit gross misdemeanors against me. That's unlawful imprisonment. That's a Class C felony. So I have the right to arrest them for 10 years without a knock. They send me to city court, Judge Lambeau in Kirkland, a city court hearing state law, and it has no authority to hear state law. So intrastate racketeering inside of the state is called leading organized crime under a particular Washington state statute. And you'll see that on the notice that's on jurisinformatics.com.
Is that sort of law indicative of many places?
Sure. You've got to know your criminal code. Let me finish this one string here.
Okay.
So their judge is engaged in leading organized crime. Anyone who sets on foot or incites three or more individuals to engage in a pattern of criminal profiteering. So now I know I can arrest the judge without an... Okay, now you're making progress, like you did in the opening. If you can climb over the cop and the prosecutor to get the judge, you're ringing the bell. You're too big for the court. They tell you, unless he's breaking arms or home invasion robberies, I don't want him in my court. And that's what I've obtained. Now, they pull me over, they commit these crimes, and I have this awareness. I have this dominion over their fuzzy behinds. And I tell them this in one document, instead of the notice you see that I sent to Redmond there on the website, and I'm waiting for the case to close before I expose the document I used. But the document was to do three things. And it was placed on top of the entire 71-page filing I did 3 years ago in Congress and the DOJ. I attach that to this notice that does three things. First, it reports the crimes of the officers to the city of Kirkland. It's a notice that goes to the court. And a notice, it's one copy went to the city council. And it reports the crimes of the officers and the judge. The second part, it's a criminal complaint, okay? The second part is a claim for damages under a chapter where the state waived the municipality's immunity from tort suit in Superior Court. You have to wait 60 days and then you can sue them. So I'm claiming $275,000 in damages for false arrest, telling them that I could go to Superior Court and get a declaratory judgment that your entire docket's null and void and you got to pay all that money back for RCW enforcement. You can only enforce your municipal code. So everybody you sent to jail will be entitled to restitution for false imprisonment. I need $275,000 to help me forget about all this and to recover from the outrage of having to speak to one of your employees again. I was rude about it. It's the way I am. How do you like me now, sir, with breath? And it, the third thing it was to accomplish is a demand for a contested hearing on the ticket. And if I see an escalated police presence in the courtroom, I know that those policemen are there to dissuade me from arresting the judge under this statute, which is unlawful imprisonment. It's unlawful restraint. And I'll have then the felony arrest, citizens arrest dominion over them for 10 years without a knock as well. So they have two options. They can either cut me a check and dismiss the case, or they can cut me a check and let me into their court. They have to dismiss and cut me a check. Checkmate. And I didn't even argue right to travel. I have the right to arrest them for 10 years without a knock. And I served that notice on them 48 hours. It was in the mail 48 hours after I was cited. So when that case closes, I'm going to have trophies on the wall. How do you like me now?
Well, I'd love to see you do this.
I just told him, I'll arrest your judge. And here's proof I have the right to. You better go on record now. Time is now. The law is great. If I'm wrong, you need to tell me now.
Well, your style reminds me a little bit of Randy Kelton.
Oh, yeah. Randy does mostly criminal complaining while I'm across the board. You'll see exposés on jurisinformatics.com, certain tactics I use. The small claims page is great. Three small claims actions that stopped government in its tracks with a very unique strategy to approach small claims. And again, folks, there's an audio seminar there on that page. You're missing out. That's just the free stuff. My courses are dirt cheap, and my students walk the walk. Yeah, they chop arms off with their paperwork. So there is a learning curve involved, and I'm not going to fool anybody and say you're going to be a CAGE litigator tomorrow. This comes from a lot of experience. In 1988, the IRS draped its badge over my nose. I was the fastest bartender on the planet, and it's older than all of us put together. You don't tick off your bartender. Well, they did. 4 years later, I was testifying as an expert witness in federal and state tax trials on the tax code. So, and that's my tax work. That's way before all of the other stuff I do. The tax work is really where I started, and I'm still relying on the analysis that I completed in 1993 and a half. And they can't speak about the statutes I use. My arguments are not in the frivolous list. So, this right to travel thing, I got this ticket, so I'm into it. But I really avoided traffic cases before that because I'm litigating far above that, you know, against the DOJ and tax criminal cases and stuff. So traffic, it's hard to get my attention. But this is a chance to tell them, without even arguing right to travel, I'll arrest your judge. Here's proof I can do it. I got him. It's over. And when you look at what I'm willing to say to them when I have checkmate, it's a spirit that you have to learn. And speaking nicely has gotten us directly where we are today, where California Senate Bill 572 says we don't have to tell the parents when we're going to have Harvey Milk Day in school. He was a gay activist, I think, died of AIDS. And they're going to have a Harvey Milk Day, and they don't have to tell you when it is. Well, you're way out of line, servant. Way out of line. And I think if I was in California, I'd be getting restraining orders against the bill's sponsors from ever setting foot near my child. So speaking nicely has gotten us to where we are today, and it's profane.
If we hadn't had such an easy way out there where you didn't have to argue right of travel, what would have been your tactic if they hadn't committed, you know, the felonies of being out of their jurisdiction?
Then I would go straight to right to travel and prove that they're in felonious misenforcement of the Motor Vehicle Code. And so under that misenforcement that even Congressman David Reichert can't deny, I have the right to arrest them. And I did attach right to travel, and I did go on to argue that also. But I keyed on their crimes because it was way easier than having to claim a right. Instead, I just claimed rights to arrest them because of those felonies. But if I didn't have that option, I could still go to the brief that's undeniable. I have a right that you're depriving me of to take my money. And that's a felony, several felonies. In fact, the Redmond notice on the Motor Vehicle Code page on jurisinformatics.com, it says, proof, I served this on the local cops and I drive without. Click on that and read the document that's linked to that page that comes that pops up. Take the audio seminar, and in that document you'll see all the felony statutes I'm speaking about.
David, can you spell that for us? Because I just went to jurisinformatics.
Sure. J-U-R-I-S, and then it's like a cross between the word inform and automatics.
Okay.
Informatics. Like format.
Okay.
Informatics.
Now, when you were talking about now, is it city police that had ticketed you? Is that correct? Okay. Now, what if that had been a state patrol?
State cop, right to travel.
Okay, so then you
would have proven with the right to travel in statute and attorney general's reports and the state Supreme Court that I have a right to travel and he's depriving me of it, and that's unlawful restraint and theft and the rest of them. Just like I argued in the Redmond notice.
Now, has there been other people that have argued that and gotten anywhere with it? Are you
aware? They're just traffic cases, and I sell a course on how to join this complaint with your prosecutor, cop, judge, as similarly situated. It's only $100. And I don't hear from students about all this because, like I said, I wasn't indulging traffic cases. But there have been some people. See, you file this on them and prove that you have that they're committing felonies, a racketeering scheme, and then you demand that the officer show up at the hearing. That's their pressure release valve. The officer will be told to not appear. Oh, the officer's not here today. Case dismissed. And they never have to get into it. So it's about the defendant and how hard they want to argue. It's not about me. It's their property on the line. So they decide how hard to push. And if all they want is out of there, then sure, the cop didn't show up, got my ticket dismissed. That's a victory.
So what is it about the judge that makes you think that they try so hard to stay out of this? Do you have any idea?
What about this process that makes the judge afraid?
Yes.
They're writing the judgments against public vehicular travelers. They're writing the court orders, sending them to jail for driving while poor, sending them to jail for other reasons under the Motor Vehicle Code when they weren't engaged in a privilege. So he's leading organized crime. He's committing, inside of the state, racketeering.
Okay, so there's something about a RICO charge then that they want to stay
federal
away from.
Right, federal RICO stat, 18 U.S.C. 1961-2, right in there.
Okay.
And you'll see those relied upon in the criminal complaint that I filed 3 years ago. Now that's in the oven. Look at how beautiful that is. 3 years without refutation at the top of government, even naming a congressman. And when you read the memorandum, it's a monument. I don't write piddly little documents. I've read all these cases for a reason. I know the maxims, and I throw cases at them from the Supreme Court all of the time. And I format my documents in the best writing style I've seen from other attorneys. So I always write better than these state attorney generals and county district attorneys. They're nothing. That's sixth grade. So my writing style is way up there. My ability to brief something comes from having read all of those cases and watching the Supreme Court brief things. And when I file something, they know the prosecutor's got his hands full with this one. So.
Okay, so there's got to be several factors here that makes them want to back off instead of... I mean, I've heard Randy talk about getting strong-armed a little bit by some of these...
You don't jump into boiling water. You test the temperature first.
Okay.
I tested the temperature with these people, and I've driven without for 2 years, and nothing's come back from Congress and the Homeland Security Committee about how I'm wrong, and I've got rights to their bacon because they committed felonies against me. Checkmate, the law works for me if they brought an action against me threatening the judge. What's your evidence? It's the felony complaint against the judge. Oops.
Now, do you drive out of the state much?
No, I just drive locally. I'm not going to push it with state patrol.
I was going to say.
Well, you know, I've heard the horror stories. I've been a legal advocate for 15 years, and I've heard tons and tons of abuse stories. So I didn't jump right in the water and go right to the state patrol. If I'm going to drive out of the county, I get a vehicle trip permit. Just so I can get my business done and not have to wade into a new jurisdiction. They know me in King County. They know me in Kirkland and Redmond and Bellevue. So I have my jurisdictions where I'm comfortable with being able to find my way through a controversy with force.
What is that permit?
It's a 3-day trip permit the Department of Licensing offers. I think it's up to $27 now. You put it in your window, fill in the date.
Okay, but then if you have a right, why would you ask for a permit?
Because
I mean, I know what you're
jurisdiction, and I don't want a controversy out of the places where I've already got a footing. It's not a fight I want to wage. I have old people going to prison under tax charges that I have to help.
Okay, all right.
Priorities.
Okay.
These people really need help, and I just can't be distracted.
So you still help quite a bit on the IRS type situation?
I try. They won't mention the laws I argue. I mean, it gets ugly. Stupid, ridiculous. When I argue tax law and you watch what they do, the issues I raise are so profoundly simple. And they can't reference the provisions I rely on.
Now, who's they?
The DOJ and the IRS. Let's take something. Okay, you have tons of arguments that say the tax code doesn't apply to me. Or I'm not the whatever. Okay, and the jurisdictional arguments outside of the tax code. And I have two of those. The DOJ finally answered them December 12, 2008, and they can't even reference the provisions that I argue. But inside the tax code, warm and friendly, a statute that all the courts say apply to me and my paycheck. It explains how to tax my paycheck. It applies to all compensation for services paid to a corporation, to a self-employed individual, sole proprietor, or an employee. I was never contradicted with the allegation that it applied to everything. I had the case law that said it applied to everything, and I took it to the Supreme Court five times before the end of 98. Twice docketed, meaning made it past the clerks who have veto power, to the justices before being denied. That is my learning litigation. I never went to small claims court. I started with U.S. Tax Court, Federal Appellate Court, and five trips to the U.S. Supreme Court. That was my first litigation experience, and twice docketed. I was docketed twice when I narrowed the arguments down to argue only one inside the tax code under this statute that explains how to tax your paycheck, and I'm the only one in the country teaching it. You're going to see a total expose of it on jurisinformatics.com. It's tax code section 83. And when you start to read the code, you come to section 83. Since I'm the only one in the country teaching it, we know that Tom Cryer, Lowell Beecraft, and Jeffrey Dickstein, three attorneys, never started to read the code. And they're representing people that are going to prison for the rest of their lives. And they never started to read the code, because you come to section 83 when you do that. I came to section 83, and my world stopped. It consumed me. I said, if this applies to me, it's not being enforced. It says, what's important is to note that it doesn't say the whole paycheck's gross income. And this is the first sentence in the opinion of the court, Court of Appeals, Fifth Circuit, 1992. Montelepper Systemed versus Commissioner, 956 Federal Second, 496,498 at brackets 1. Quote, Section 83A explains how property received in exchange for services is taxed, end quote. It's the owner's manual for a paycheck. And it says, if in connection with the performance of services, property is transferred, the excess over the amount paid shall be included in gross income. Well, before I can determine the excess, I have to determine the amount paid, because the excess is in relation to the amount paid. The amount paid is defined in regulations under Section 83, 1.83-3G. The term amount paid refers to the value of any money or property paid for the property that 83 applies to. Labor is property. Labor's value, any property's value, is determined through the terms of an arm's length transaction. Said of a transaction negotiated between two unrelated parties acting in their own best interest under no compulsion to buy or sell, all relevant facts disclosed. U.S. versus Cartwright, 1973, three or four tax court cases I cite, Treasury Regulation 27 CFR 70.150B, as well as Black's Law Dictionary 6th edition, page 109, arm's length transaction. So I know when I deal with an unrelated party in an arm's length transaction for the sale of something, including labor, what I receive from them is its value. And that would include my sick pay, my retirement pay, everything they give me under that contract. Let's point to an exception. Dave, you sold more vacuum cleaners than anybody in the country in July. We're impressed. Here's a $4,000 bonus. I didn't contract for that, did I? That's an excess over the amount paid.
That's what
paid.
I was going to say. The bonuses would be the excess.
Because it's not within my contract.
Right.
Okay, great. This was just argued in criminal court in Alaska. You'll see it on the Alaska page on jurisinformatics.com. At you'll see red number 6. That's the motion arguing Section 83 that was filed. Below that, there's a December 12th entry, a rebuttal of red number 6 motion, and they can't reference Section 83. And tax court, Cohn versus Commissioner, C-O-H-N, you'll see it cited, 73 USTC 444,446, right there in the middle of the page. It applies to everything, 1979. So I've never been contradicted with any of this, and they can't reference that statute. It happens to be the definition of income. Anybody that tells you income's not defined in the code, they never started to read the code. When you start to read the code, you reach Section 83. And rather than sit here and call myself a genius, I call them stupid. I don't want to be called a braggart. They don't have an excuse. It's stupidity and negligence that has them out there teaching courses or offering services as attorneys. They've never started to read the code. And I've just proven it. So, when you argue that this regulation includes everything, where's your authority to exclude labor from the term any money or property? They'll penalize you. Now, in my first cases on this, 1993-94, tax court used one standard to omit from any money or property, or to exclude from that phrase labor. They used one basis. They said, since you didn't buy your labor before you sold it, everything you receive when you sell your labor is a profit. You do not have a cost interest or a basis in your labor. It was an arbitrary exclusion. They didn't cite a law that allowed them to exclude. And it was, they slaughtered the clients. Thousands of dollars in penalties for raising this argument. Now, this is like 4 years ago, I found four Supreme Court cases that the government won, arguing that you can't arbitrarily exclude anything when the law says any property. It has to be an exclusion based on law. And I have them rejecting the argument only on one basis, and it was an arbitrary exclusion from the term any money or property. So I lit up the argument again and rebriefed it. And that's what you see in the motion on the Alaska page at red number 6. And you see the rebuttal on December 12th to the motion at red number 6, and they can't talk about it.
Okay, now, what you're saying here is that resembles somewhat of what they try to do with investments, correct?
No, this is just property transferred in connection with the performance of services. That's the name of Section 83.
Okay, but what I'm saying is when it sounded like they were trying to tax the amount over and above the basis.
Yeah, anything outside of your contract for the sale of your personal services.
Okay.
So I wasn't going for capital gains or any other type of thing. It was simply self-employed or employee compensation.
Okay.
And in the Alaska case, by the way, the argument was waged over failure to pay taxes on pension, and they couldn't speak. So it applies to sick pay, pension, benefits. Everything you get when you sell your labor is within the value of your labor. I filed all this evidence, okay? In Seattle, a civil case, they said it's frivolous to say that the IRS's authority comes from Regulation 1.1-1, where they name Americans as subject only in a regulation. It's frivolous. And up in Alaska, they won't speak about it. But in the IRS's most frivolous list on page 16, they rely upon 1.1-1 as an authority, just like I claim they use it. And in an indictment down in Florida, U.S. versus Hermer, they rely upon 1.1-1 as an authority at paragraph 11 of the indictment. Why is it frivolous in Alaska and Seattle, but you're using it in other places? And I filed all this evidence, 350 pages all told. The first 16, I think it was a criminal complaint to Barack Obama, mailed on January 29th, his first week in office. Welcome to the Hill. Welcome to the White House. You have a job to do. I want to see change I can believe in. Yeah. And I addressed him as a servant. You won't see admiration. This is a fad, and I'm not into it. He is a fad, and that's all. He's the banker's prostitute. His whole cabinet is bankers. It's a Wall Street administration. Now, I filed this complaint presumptively received by him February 2nd through priority mail. 51 days later, he sees me clubbing the DOJ like a redheaded stepchild. 51 days after he receives my 350 pages, which went to Eric Holder as well, his new attorney general, it went in the mail the day before he was confirmed. He was confirmed January 30th. The certificate of service is signed January 29th. So, welcome in capital letters to him. Now, not a response from the White House. I supplemented that complaint with another complaint about New Mexico misconduct, a trial down there over rights to counsel, on March 16th. On May 5th, I supplemented again. I haven't heard a word from the White House on this. And 51 days after the first complaint, he announces, I've appointed Paul Volcker to head the team who will, quote, totally overhaul the tax code, end quote. I caused that. He can't deny a word of it. And I thumped his attorney general terribly with tax law. We have to totally overhaul the tax code, meaning I'm turning my back on all of America, and to preserve the status quo, I'm going to appoint a banker to write law. Despite the fact I'm a constitutional professor, I've taught law, I was president of the Harvard Law Review, and I overlook Article 1, Section 1 of the federal Constitution that says all legislative authority shall be vested in a Congress consisting of a Senate and the House of Representatives. If a banker is writing tax law to be used on us, isn't that kind of like taxation without representation? Isn't Congress supposed to write the law? And here's a constitutional professor, a president, setting aside Article 1, Section 1. I haven't heard anybody else mention this yet, and I watch hours of news every day, and experts, all they, that they gather in these news shows. Article 1, Section 1, and Congress is sitting around going, okay, write law, you're a banker.
Well, they don't write most of the law they have anyway.
Whatever. Constitutionally, they're required to. And this is where, in public, I've caused them to openly state bankers will write the tax code. They wrote the last one, but that was in private, 1954. This has happened right in public, and no one can even see it for what it is. Writing law from the executive branch? You're a global newcomer. A two-term senator from America's toilet seat.
Well, don't they also accuse that the judges are doing the same thing, writing law from the bench?
Oh, whatever. I'm talking about just the White House and my complaint.
Okay.
And I got him, and he turned his back on all of us. I offer a course on how to join that presidential complaint, by the way. You'll see it on jurisinformatics.com. So if you want to join your IRS agent, your U.S. attorney, or your whatever commissioner or whatever, anybody enforcing the tax code against you, if you look at my work and you perceive that, yeah, this is a felony, you can join your people as similarly situated to the criminals I named, and the door of the Oval Office is open. All you do is join a complaint that's already cooking in the Oval Office. So it's never been easier to complain right to the top of government. Now let's say you're indicted. Who's your star witness? Well, he's an expert. In fact, he was a constitutional scholar and professor, and now he's in the White House. You think they're going to indict somebody that's going to call Barack Obama as a witness? I'm sorry, I won't say his name anymore. The president as a witness? I'm trying to make you harder to indict. It's all you can do. You won't stop him from taking your money. That's a civil type of action against you, whether in court or not. It's civil.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're trying to take your liberty, you have rights under the Sixth and Seventh Amendment that the civil defendant doesn't have. And those are rights of the accused, rights to face your accuser, the rights to an attorney, and their burden is higher in a criminal case. So the best I can do for you is keep you from being indicted, and I can't do that every time, but I've succeeded twice. The gentleman in Florida named Chris was before the grand jury 29 months ago, maybe 30, and presented them with his affidavit of joinder to my complaint and my complaint, which is 180 pages all told. The memorandum's 58. The RICO criminal complaint affidavit is 33 pages and has some related exhibits. He joined that, and he presented the grand jury with both of them, and he never heard from them again. He was there. They're going to allege that he was helping people fill out Pete Hendrickson tax returns, zeros. And those people go to prison, and he didn't get indicted. And the civil defendant in Seattle, Robert Arant, whose case concluded in March of 08, has not been indicted. And he handled $28 million in a warehouse bank where I could put money on account, and when I have to pay my mortgage, I could call him and tell him pay my mortgage, and he'd cut a check on his limited partnership, and I'd receive that level of banking privacy. That was the only service he was offering. And they twisted him around in knots and got all the information they needed to indict. That's what they do. They file a civil case first, get all the evidence, and then go criminal. Because if they go criminal, even a hint, first, you can claim Fifth Amendment privilege in a civil case. So they started the civil without even mentioning criminal, so he couldn't prove there was possible criminal charges coming. And they got all the evidence they needed to indict him, the way they do, the things they overlook, their schedule of indictment. They got everything they would need typically to indict somebody, and he's not been indicted. And that was belligerent pleading. We filed a felony complaint in state county superior court here with a petition to impanel a grand jury because they went in his house, took his computer, kept him out of his house while they raided his house. Those are three felonies unless they can prove they have authority. That's residential burglary, computer trespass, and unlawful imprisonment. And so we are criminal petition was for a grand jury to be impaneled for all these crimes we alleged against two U.S. attorneys and two IRS agents. I co-complained with the guy on this. I co-complained on a lawsuit we filed in Superior Court for a declaratory judgment that probable cause existed to arrest the two U.S. attorneys and two IRS agents under that state statute that says you can arrest a felon. And they removed all of it to federal court. We knew they would. It was a farce. But just to show them how belligerent he was willing to be to beat them up with the tax code. And that's why he's not been indicted. Oh, they got run around the track on that one many times. We ended up joining Federal District Court Chief Judge Robert Lasnik to the state felony complaint and slandered him on the record in a very, I pulled a really nasty trick on the record with him. You want to hear it?
Okay.
Okay. This proves I'm not a gentleman all the time. This judge ran from everything and picked three cases out of thin air that were utterly irrelevant to deny the claim under issues A and B. I'm only named in a regulation, and you have no permission to leave D.C. under Title IV, Section 72. Section 83 was irrelevant because the case didn't involve compensation for services. And he filed a motion to reconsider the judgment. And I wrote everything, okay, but he wrote a motion to reconsider, or he filed one, saying, motion to reconsider, you've cited cases that are totally irrelevant in a dereliction of duty, blah, blah, I can't remember exactly what I said, but it went on to say, the defendant didn't expect anything else having read the cases against him, talking about the judge. And I took two cases and took the name of the individual out of the case and plugged in Lasnik, the last name of the judge that he was dealing with in Seattle. These are two cases that exist, judgments against judges, criminal convictions against judges. And I took their names out and put his name into the site. And so if he went and looked up that case, he'd see it's not about him, but it's about a judge that was really greasy. And I substituted two names. Having read the cases against him, see U.S. versus Lasnik, and I cited the Supreme Court case where Tennessee Chancery Judge David Lanier was handling divorce cases and was seeing women in his chambers over their controversies, and he took to raping them. And two female prosecutors from the DOJ had to take him all the way to the Supreme Court to get a conviction. The circuit court said, you're right, the statute 18 U.S.C. 242, which makes it a crime to violate somebody's constitutional rights, you're right, it's void for vagueness because it doesn't reasonably inform you in advance that raping those women would violate their constitutional rights. And they had to go all of the way to the Supreme Court to get a conviction on this guy. So I plugged Lasnik's name into that one. And see also, in this other case, was Oklahoma versus Donald A. Thompson. Donald A. Thompson was a judge presiding over a particular murder trial where a toddler was allegedly murdered. And while on the bench was using a pumping device for male enhancement and was convicted of three counts of indecent exposure, with his clerk testifying against him, the female clerk. And I plugged Robert Lasnik's name into that case also. When he looks up the docket numbers, I'm comparing him to basically Satan on the bench. And he penalized the defendant $1,000 for that and ordered the clerk to redact that particular paragraph. And I wrote for the defendant a motion to reconsider saying, hey, you penalized me for misrepresenting authorities on the record. We thought that was the thing to do when you misrepresented those three cases as those that dispose of my issues. I thought it was an invitation from the court to do so. So we got real belligerent right at the judge in nasty ways, and he's not been indicted. So I think I got a big, don't bring him into my court, comment from the judge toward the DOJ on that one.
Let me go ahead and do a station ID. You're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community-supported radio. And we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And if you'd like to send an email or ask any questions, the email address is khen.dj@gmail.com. If you'd like to talk, ask any questions of the guests. And my co-host tonight is Shannon Hemingway. And our guest tonight is David Merlin. And we're getting into some nitty-gritty court cases and things that David is trying to inform us on, educating ourselves on statute law. Is that right?
Code pleading, yes. Yes, the law is great.
Now, when you started with the codes, you said it was the IRS codes, but when it comes down to codes, there's a lot of different codes, correct?
Yes.
And so you can get into, like, your state statutes and your IRS.
Well, okay, the codes, there aren't really a lot of different codes.
Okay.
There are a
lot
of different sections in a few respective codes.
Okay.
You have the federal code. It's titles 1 through 50. 26 is the tax code. 18 is crimes. 49 is transportation. So it's like an encyclopedia of law.
Right.
For federal jurisdictions. You have a state code, which will have everything that the cities and towns can do. It'll have everything, taxation and everything on a state level. And every municipality has to have its own code. And so you are pretty much done, but there's a lot to know within all of those. So it's not that there are a lot of different codes. There are a lot of different statutes in respective codes that you really have to keep in order. And separating one jurisdiction from the other is really square one. You have to know what a city can and can't do. You have to know what the state can and can't do. So there is a learning curve, but what I found through all of my mistakes and successes are a few things that rise to the top that simply screw with them in ways they don't want to see you again. Now, I'm a fish too big for the frying pan. Thank you, servant. Why did it take this much? Why? Why did I have to be this to you? It's pathetic. Now, here's a little strategy that won me $15,055 from Kirkland and Superior Court. I spent the money. When they have this pattern of conduct where they'll mess around with you over some little dinky and they'll trump up a charge, maybe criminal, maybe civil, whatever, and they drag you in. Well, you have rights to discover documents under court rules. You also have rights to discover documents in disclosure under your State Disclosure Act. It's your state equivalent of the Federal Freedom of Information Act. So if I were to go into a criminal case, and I'm speaking about two of them now, I file a request for certain documents that I know they have to have, like the photo ID the cop has to have issued by the department. It's called an evidence of authorization in a certain statute that requires they produce it in traffic stops. By the way, the Kirkland police, last thing I did, I said, excuse me, can I see your evidence of authorization, please? And they both took it out and showed it to me. I said, you disappoint me. I was hoping you'd commit a misdemeanor against me by not showing me. Anyway, I have a list of documents I know they have to have, and that's one of them. So I request under court rules that they supply me with this evidence for my case. And I send the same list of documents in a letter under my State Disclosure Act to the city, to the county, whoever's against me. Let's say it's a city. So I send a request to the city under state law asking for the same documents I asked for under court rules. And I tell them in my state law request, this is about that criminal case over there in your court. See my docket number? They will forward the request for documents to the prosecutor. The prosecutors get paid to do nothing but push people through that turnstile. It's a cash register at high speed, and prosecutors are paid to write one page of paper to put people in jail. And they don't do their homework, they don't write memorandums, and they fudge on discovery. I did this in two cases. They forwarded both requests to the prosecutor. 5 years later, I sued them. The last of the statute of limitations, they cut it down to 1 year after that. So I sued them. I got $5 a day for 3,011 days worth of violations. Had nothing to do with my criminal case, but I put something in the oven, they fudged on it, and later on a clean house. So you file two discovery requests, one under state law, and they'll mess that one up, so damages will accrue, regardless of what happens to you in court. And I spent the money. Can I get an amen? So I hate Kirkland, and they cited me May 7th. The pump is primed. And again, people, I can talk like this because I know what I'm doing, and I'm in their face, and they don't talk to me. I drive without, I don't see a cop, and I'm on record telling them, I'll arrest your judge. You leave me alone, or go on record now with proof I'm wrong. So, code pleading. Law. They have to follow law. And when you hit them with... Now, at the end of my notice that I served on the Kirkland pigs that did... I'm sorry, ladies, the police. I served it on them. At the end, it said, you're lucky we're not in New Mexico, or I would have the right to kill all of you. See New Mexico Statutes 30-2-7. Justifiable homicide for any unlawful act against you, your wife, or your family. Justifiable homicide, any unlawful act. Listen to how I'm speaking to my servants. If this is New Mexico, I'd have the right to kill all of you. They've never seen anything like me. And so I'm at a certain pinnacle, folks. I'm not saying I'm the top dog in the world, but I know what I'm saying, and I always rely on the law. Because statute is perfect, except in California. Terrible code. And Oregon doesn't have very good self-defense laws. Colorado's is a castle doctrine relevant mostly to your home, your real estate. So you're not going to have the same protections in every state. In New Mexico, I could kill them. Here, I can only arrest them and take them to the sheriff. I feel bad.
Okay, so when they're talking about criminal code, what now is that? The criminal code is in what?
It's going to be a title in state law, in your state code. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a title about taxation. You're going to have a title about motor vehicles. You're going to have a title for this, a title for that. You're going to have a title on criminal procedure. You're going to have a title on crimes and offenses or crimes and punishments. And in that title, you'll find everything from possession of child porn to leading organized crime, possession of drugs. It's all right there.
Okay, now, your IRS codes, now, do they have to harmonize somewhat with the state codes?
For the purposes of income tax?
Mm-hmm.
You won't believe it. I'm sincere. Section 83 of the tax code, I already told you about.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a couple states with their own income tax code, but by and large, you'll find in the states that impose an income tax, Washington State does not, where I'm at, you'll find provisions that say a certain portion of the Federal Internal Revenue Code is adopted as state law by this reference, or a certain subchapter is adopted by this reference, or your state liability shall be a percentage of your federal liability. That's them adopting as state law the federal code. Section 83 is state law when they do this. So this is the identical protection. You can't have it, so it's not a protection, but it is there in the law, and they can't deny it. So I don't know what I'm talking about. It's there, and you can't have it, but it applies in the states also. On tocongress.com, let me see. I'm trying to think if I have it on jurisinformatics.com. I don't think I do, but on tocongress.com, enter the curriculum. To do so, you have to agree to leave the documents there. You can view them anytime you like, but I won't have my analysis looked at one document at a time by the Patriot Movement. They just tear people apart. A very spiteful sect. I'm looking at the curriculum. I'm at the home page. I click on enter, or I agree. It goes through the next page. There's testimonials there, and I click on enter. I get into the site, and it's a curriculum. On the left-hand side, there's several pages to choose from. And if you click on applications, I think it's page number 6 of the curriculum, applications, scroll down and there will be several indented paragraphs with a little box, a tiny box that precedes the text of the paragraph. That box is a link. Click on the box on number 1 and you'll see the briefing for California adopting Section 83 by reference in its code section 17081. So there's the bridge, and you'll see me adapt the federal brief on Section 83 by writing only one paragraph saying, here's proof Section 83 applies in California state, here's the state law, and then bingo, right into Section 83.
Okay, so are you saying the state, I'm a little bit lost here and trying to figure out, is state law trumping the federal law?
No, it's okay. Adopting it by reference. It's saying,
okay,
hey, look at that tax code the federal government's got. Oh, we're going to adopt that part of it, and we're going to adopt that part of it. So we don't want to have to rewrite it just to tax our citizens.
Okay, now one thing that I ran across when I was looking at our state statutes recently, there was a huge amount of references in there to harmonizing with. Are you familiar with that?
Harmonizing with, it's another way of saying in paramateria.
Okay.
As relevant and applicable to the same topic as the other. This shall be construed in paramateria with, but it's all basically adoption by reference.
Why do you think they decided to do so much of that?
Look how complicated the federal tax code is. They need that, and they don't want to have to write their own.
Okay, but this wasn't in reference to the tax code, but it was just in the statutes. I noticed that when I was just thumbing through.
It's a way to make it easy on writing law. If you just see another act that you'd like to adopt, you say, geez, that looks real good to me. They adopt that because it's already working. It already has established case law under it. So it just makes it really easy to adopt law that's already written instead of having to write your own.
Okay.
I've seen it in a lot of places, mostly
okay.
Tax law.
Okay.
And when they make it state law, it's their fault if it protects you. It's not your fault. And they hate those protections when you find them in statute. Wow. What state are you in, Melody?
I'm in Colorado.
Okay, and was it Shannon?
Yes.
Your state?
He's here, too.
I'm from Michigan.
Okay.
But he's from Michigan.
I'm a Michigan citizen.
Your state has cancer in the form of county police. Border to border. Colorado. Horror stories. Do you know Kurt Riggin?
No.
He lives in Wheat Ridge.
That's where I grew up.
And he knows more than me. Not necessarily about tax law, but trial law and criminal pleading, criminal process. He's a genius. He's tribal counsel for several different tribes and is not expected to live very long. He's already outlived the prognosis from cancer and borderline mesothelioma from asbestos exposure, so he won't be with us very much longer. But a close friend of mine, we've lectured a bunch up here in Washington before he moved to Colorado. I saw him last week when he was up in Washington here for a couple days, and you'll want to get a hold of him. Why don't you email me?
Is that R-I-G-G-I-N?
I'm sorry, what?
How do you spell that?
R-I-G-G-I-N.
Okay.
K-U-R-T.
Okay.
Ask me for his contact information at pr@jurisinformatics.com. I'll be glad to get that to you, and boy, you got to have him on your show. You got to.
Okay.
It's a rare opportunity, and you won't get another one.
Okay, I'll do that.
Ask him about the blind man. It's the funniest damn story about criminal trials I ever heard. Oh, I'm not going to blow it here for your listeners. Get him on your show and ask him about the blind man that was hit in the crosswalk. He'll have you in stitches. I don't have anything like it. I'm jealous as hell. What he did to that cop on the stand. Anyway, funny, funny story. I got tears in my eyes just thinking about it. I want to tell you so bad, but you get Kurt to tell you. He's a great storyteller, too, and a super guy. He was a kung fu instructor leading up to 1993 when he was rear-ended on his Harley by a step van that was going very fast and hit him on his motorcycle while he was parked at a traffic light and pushed him right through the intersection. And he had a whole bunch of internal injuries that gave him chronic nausea. So he's a medical marijuana patient to battle the nausea. And then the state of Washington just took him to the cleaners with cops brutalizing him and everything. So he's got stories he can tell you about close encounters of the worst kind, nonstop for hours. This guy he's walked the walk, and I'll tell you, when I listened to him thunder about the law, I've now reached a level of expertise where I can do that. It's a spirit you have to acquire, and he had it when I met him in like 1996. And I saw that he's just confident about the law. He's a code pleader. He says, this is what the Patriot Movement does. Stay away from all of that. These are court rules. Here's our state constitution. This is our state motor vehicle code. This is traffic court rules. And started me off on the basics and kept me there. I already had all this work with tax law done, but most of that was litigation through the mail, proved to be futile, and so I migrated to state law, a naturally motor vehicle code, and was a student of his. Just watched everything he did, listened to everything he said about these lines they can't cross, the lines they can cross, knowing the cop's job, the prosecutor's job, and the rights of the accused in criminal trials, and it was just a wealth of information coming out of him, and I finally got to where I know what they have to do, and I know what they can't do, and I push them into places they can't be so that I have a reason to file criminal complaints against them. Oh, they hate that, and so I always do it. But Kurt Riggin, he's notches above me, and when he thunders about the law, I sound just like I heard him speak when I first met him and since, and it's a confidence that the written law protects you. And when you know you have checkmate on them, you push them.
Now, does he do a radio program, or has he done radio programs?
No, he's always very ill.
Okay.
And he practices for people, but without a license. So he walks a fine line there in Colorado. And he's also working on tribal council status and getting admitted to practice in federal court as tribal status. He has a whole bunch of tribal issues that he can describe for you also. Wonderful work for the Indians.
Okay. Now, I'll bring up Randy Kelton and Deborah Stevens, because it seems to me like there's a similarity in going after the criminal codes that these officials seem to...
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I've spoken with Randy Kelton. I've been on his show, and he praises my work and my knowledge. So, criminal pleading. He knows more about triggering the grand jury. That's really his expertise right there. Very broad knowledge about the grand jury and pursuing criminal charges. Whereas I file a criminal complaint with a presumption they're going to laugh at me, and all it will ever amount to is politically caustic laundry. That's all I ever really think I'll get out of a criminal complaint, because they're above the law. I tell them in this notice that I just served Kirkland, I said, when you tell the officers that they won't be sanctioned for their crimes because they work for government, be certain to tell them also that you don't speak for me. Meaning, don't tell them I'm not going to arrest them. So criminal complaining it's one of the most important tools I ever acquired, was the ability to write like a prosecutor in the same type of documents. I have 99% of the authority of a prosecutor. The 1% I'm missing is the handcuffs. I can't deliver that. All I can do is complain. And so I presume I'll never get anywhere, and I go on to other remedies right away. A real good one is to name the judge in the criminal complaint and then file your motion to dismiss with the evidence behind it, the criminal complaint being part of the evidence, and on top of that, put an affidavit of prejudice against the judge saying, I named you in a criminal complaint, you got to get off this case. See Exhibit A. The next judge comes in and says, do I feel lucky? Mayberry versus Pennsylvania, Supreme Court, not too long ago, probably 1980s. In the case, the defendant was cited for contempt while he was calling the judge a stumbling dog, a son of a bitch. And the Supreme Court went all the way to the Supreme Court because the same judge imposed the contempt sanctions. And the Supreme Court ruled, when a judge is assailed verbally that badly, he has a duty to remove himself from the case and shouldn't be imposing a sanction. So I know where to push a judge and how to do it to where they simply have to get off the case. It's over. Oh, here's a great one. You're going to have a good time with this. On jurisinformatics.com, I'm going there right now. On jurisinformatics.com, look at the San Mateo page. I lit up the black robe of Lisa Novak, San Mateo County Superior Court Judge, appointed by Arnold Schwarzenegger in 1995 at the age of, or 2005 at the age of 39. And she falsely arrested somebody for contempt. And I got to write the criminal complaint and affidavit of prejudice to get rid of her. I'm on jurisinformatics.com. I click on in. And on the left-hand side, I see San Mateo County Superior Court. It has an audio seminar there about the documents you'll see. And the judge, the picture there is not Lisa Novak, but it is a judge here in Washington who I know has committed a felony, so I can arrest her. Anyway, here's a there's a link where you can open up the MP3 file and listen to the man's two-minute hearing where he was arrested. At the first hearing, he says, "Hey, I haven't been arraigned yet," and the judge was moving forward on something. And the judge says, "I find you incompetent. Go to see these two doctors, Dr. Johnson and Dr. Jensen." And he instead sees his own doctor and comes back to court the next time after having demanded that the judge recuse herself, and this was without me. This is before he met me. And when she said, "You're incompetent, see these two doctors," bailiff, take him out of the courthouse. And they removed him physically from the court for saying, "I haven't been arraigned yet." The next hearing, after having asked her to recuse herself for that stunt, he shows up to court, and she says, "Now, I got a letter here from Dr. Smith and Dr. Sven that says you didn't go to see them." "Well, those were two different doctors, weren't they?" She goes, "Do you have an excuse for not going to see them?" And he says, "Yeah." "Do you have an excuse for not recusing yourself?" She goes, "Remand him into custody," and arrested him. You can hear the handcuffs going on and everything. Well, before they can arrest you for contempt of court, they have to allow you the opportunity for allocution to mitigate the sanctions, saying, "I didn't think I was in contempt," or to prove you're not in contempt at all. It's a Fifth Amendment right before you lose liberty. She didn't provide him with that. You can hear it in the hearing. Well, that's called kidnapping. He was not in contempt. She did not give him allocution opportunities, and she took all of his liberty when he was entitled to 100% of it. So you'll see a kidnapping complaint against the judge here. And there's two ways to look at this page. You can look at it from the standpoint of the judge or from the standpoint of the defendant or student. From the top down, it's the student. What do I do first? What do I do second? And why do I do it? But from the judge's standpoint, you start at the bottom. And you picture, this is a tattoo parlor owner that San Mateo was trying to run out of town. And this judge committed this act in court against the guy. And I wrote the criminal complaint for kidnapping, battery, extortion, and something else. All the Word documents are right there. Now, you start at the bottom, and the judge comes into the case and says, "Oh, what has he filed against me today? This ought to be funny." And she gets into it. It's an affidavit of prejudice first. Affidavit of prejudice? What's he talking about? "Oh, his exhibits. He says he complained to Superior Court to get a grand jury impaneled against me? See Exhibit A. He complained to the FBI? See Exhibit B." And she gets deeper and deeper and has to recuse herself under a kidnapping complaint. Nobody got hurt, so it's life imprisonment with the possibility of parole. And listen to the interview with Craig in the audio for this page. Craig was a witness to this guy's hearings. And he'll tell you the difference between the one hearing and the next hearing after this complaint hit the record. He'll tell you, "Okay, I lowered her temperature with this pleading."
Now, is that Craig Patterson you're talking
yeah.
about? Yeah. Okay.
And I interviewed him about what he saw in court. And I'll tell you, you know, you hear a lot of big, bad stories of people, "Oh, I sure got that." Okay. And he never saw it. And he could hear that, you know, I was confident with everything, but he never saw it. He didn't appreciate the power. And then when he saw the effect it had on Judge Lisa Novak. Now, Craig, when he first heard me, windbag, gas bag, nobody's this good, no way, started studying everything I write and found it's all in the case law. It's all in statute. And now he's my promoter. And he knows what everybody else is teaching, studying them for years. And now he's my promoter. So listen to Craig's description of what these documents did to that judge. And look at what the student would do first, second, third, fourth, and listen to the audio description. This is how I was brought in for one purpose, recuse the judge. She's out of control. That was my only purpose. Now, after that, they called in a public defender to handle the hearing for recusal because they didn't want the words criminal complaint for kidnapping against the judge uttered in the courtroom. And so he heard, he was there to handle the defendant didn't even ask for a public defender. They got one in there to make sure the record didn't reflect conversation about the criminal complaint against the judge. So the judge recused herself, and the other another judge comes in, and more tame, because he's saying, I don't need paperwork like this filed against me. And the public defender files a motion for violation of speedy trial rights. And the judge looks at the prosecutor and says, are all these lapses in the record true? And the prosecutor says, I'll get back to you on that. And got a call from the prosecutor a couple hours later. The public defender did, and the prosecutor was dropping the case. So they were so bent on screwing this guy out of town that they forgot the timelines, and as soon as the court calmed down, it became a court again. First motion that was filed, case dismissed. Things you got to know.
So but, in other words, when people are learning about this, with this learning curve, they're also needing to know the job descriptions of all the people that they meet up with in the court so that they know what they're, the criminal... what they do that's against the law.
You'll hear Craig in the interview say that, you know, I'm a court watcher. I go to court, and I thought, gosh, that sounds kind of unfair, what just happened to this guy. And now I know Dave's stuff, and I recognize it as crime all around me. They make so many mistakes and get by with them because of our ignorance that when you cure some of it, you got targets everywhere for criminal complaints. And that's really the first thing, is to know a few basics about their job so at least you have a common occurrence that warrants a criminal complaint. Like a county inspector that enters somebody's land to see if they built an awning without a permit or a porch, whatever. That's criminal trespassing. It's either criminal trespassing or the government has to tell you they have free, unfettered, 24/7, 365 access to your land. I want them to say that on the record right away. Because I know they can't. So there's a common occurrence. City copywriting violations of state law. There's an occurrence for me to file criminal complaints. I know certain triggers that they do all the time, and they get by with our ignorance. So you cure some of that, and your learning curve already paid you dividends.
Okay, that brings up an important point. I've been sitting here listening and wondering, you know, a lot of what you're talking about is just the difference between your knowledge and actually being offensive and people's
uh-huh.
ignorance and trying to be, you know, weakly defensive. But
you'd be amazed at how much of just that dynamic causes what I'm able to
right.
do.
I believe it entirely. It kind of kept me just sitting here listening, although I'm fairly mouthy myself. I am wondering about the difference between a group of people who are, you know, fairly a lot of members, loosely, in this country who are trying to be more aggressive and who are addressing just this tax issue and who you apparently have some disdain for and maybe even contempt, and that is the Patriot Tax Movement, which is certainly not just one group but kind of a loosely defined group of people who probably are disinformants mm-hmm. on the roll, some, you know, various groups. But you seem to have, you know, a lot more familiarity, but then a sincere contempt for their methods, and I wonder what the real contrast is, because it seems like, you know, you look on some sites, they say, well, I tried the Patriot Tax Movement, and you might think I'm a traitor and a coward, but you just go get a tax attorney and get back into the system, and then you won't have to look over your shoulder and be afraid to protect your assets and all that.
Okay, what I've done, which sets me apart from the Patriot Movement, is I've gone into civil and criminal tax trials with my findings, and the government can't mention the provisions I rely upon. And my arguments are not on the frivolous list. That's why the Alaska defendant chose to go with my briefing.
Does the reason that they not mention it have to do with the fact that they negate a lot of other cases or set them up for further litigation by people that had prior claims?
No, it's worse than that. Their arguments are frivolous. They don't have the respect for the tax code that it requires. I do. And I didn't learn a thing until I abandoned the Patriot Movement and ignored them in 1992. Oh, it was just a bunch of slander against me when I'm teaching things nobody else even knows. I wasn't going to take it, so I turned my back on them and offer my courses. You can buy them or you can forget them. Who cares? If you want to go with these people that are preaching arguments that are on the IRS's frivolous list, you go for it. I don't have anything for you. And if you choose that route and then badmouth me and fall in with people that do badmouth me when they haven't started to read the code ever, I don't have any respect for you now either. And if you choose, I've seen Jimmy Chisholm went to prison like 2 years ago. 6 months later, his wife died. This is serious. And the Patriot Movement is not. People die. 1993, Christine York, a lady that was coming to the foundation that gave me a job trying to help with 1040 NR penalties, the non-resident alien penalties. And she was levied into poverty, a 52-year-old human resources specialist, a very responsible executive assistant, levied into poverty, screwed up her credit, forced her to live with her mom. First time in her life that she was messed up financially. Her digestive tract went into paralysis. She laid on a gurney in the University of Washington Medical Center for 30 days, undiagnosed. Her digestive tract did not move for 30 days, and then she died of a massive stroke. This is serious. They set the law aside to put senior citizens in prison for the rest of their lives. In Alaska, 68 years old, Eugene Warner. In New Mexico, Margaret Linnell, 60 years old, and they set the law aside to get it. And no one else is serious. They don't. Okay, there's a stunt they pull. This is called Investing in the Patriot Movement. I'm the IRS, and I'm going to get paid for sitting on my butt. Watch this. Oh, Pete Hendrickson has a book. Oh, Lynn Meredith has a book. Oh, Al Carter from Utah. They have a strategy. I got an idea. Let a bunch of people file that garbage with us. We have 3 years to challenge it. Let it sit for 2.5 years, and then let's throw a rope around all of them and herd them all into a pen, lean and levy city. So when they file that strategy here, refund the money, especially if the person's claiming a big refund. Let's say it's an engineer, and I want $25,000 back from the IRS. Give it to them, because this institution is going to photocopy that check and show it to a bunch of people. Everybody will come our way with these requests for refunds, and we'll give a whole bunch of them refunds. So they get a whole bunch more headed this way, and then we'll stop. And then 2.5 years later, we'll lien and levy all of them for penalties and interest we didn't have to work for. And they won't have the money that we refunded by then, and so we'll get their homes too. Hopefully we'll screw up a bunch of marriages. That's an investment in the Patriot Movement. The ones who cannot see 3 years down the road, Pete Hendrickson, Al Carter, Lynn Meredith, they make the money off of you, and when problems come down, you can't reach them. Pete Hendrickson, now, I think he's been indicted, hasn't he?
The name's...
Yeah, so it's a game they play. People come to me when they're on fire for following other people. The best I can do for you is try to keep you from being indicted. And I told this guy in Seattle, Robert Arant, exactly that. I don't want to take your case, but I need the money. May of 07. And I said, in 90 days, I'll have the DOJ flat on its back, pinned to the ground by the throat for you, and they'll set the law aside. And in 90 days after I took the case, he had referenced, I wrote all of this, I'm just saying he referenced in his counterclaim and in his answer to the complaint that all they have is a regulation that names Americans a subject, but he didn't argue it. He didn't ask for relief based upon that deficiency. He simply stated that that's where their authority is. At 90 days, he files a motion for curative instruction. I'm on the Juris Informatics. I'm clicking on the tax code page. At the top of the page there, it says IRS income taxes, U.S. versus ARANT. That link will open up a page the defendant was maintaining. On the bottom of the page, it's in bold type. Those are the superior court pleadings I told you about, felony complaint, whatnot. And the top three-quarters of the page are the federal case. And at the 90-day point, motion for curative instruction, I'm scrolling. I'll see when he filed that. I think it was August sometime. Yeah, August 3rd, 2007, on the gray defendant's page, when you click on U.S. versus ARANT. August 3rd, motion for curative instruction. Open that document. Since I've stated they have only the authority from regulation and they haven't contradicted me, I presume they've committed these felonies under state law. I want the court to instruct me on how to make a citizen's arrest inside the courtroom when the two U.S. attorneys and IRS agents show up to argue the motions. I want the court to tell me about bringing guns into the courtroom in case the armed bailiff tries to intervene on the prosecutor's behalf. I just climbed right up the court's skirt with this motion about bringing guns into federal court. It's as ugly as you can be to a judge saying, hey, tell us all about bringing guns into your courtroom, please. Read the motion. That's 90 days into the case. And I told him I could be exactly at that point, 90 days, here we go.
So I guess what I'm trying to follow here then is that he just didn't follow what you prepared for him.
Oh, he did everything.
Oh, he did.
He didn't get indicted, but they set the law aside to get the civil judgment against him, and they wouldn't answer the motion for curative instruction. It was denied, and that's why he joined the federal district court chief judge to the felony complaint in the superior court, was because he wouldn't come clean with either proof that they have authority or instruction on how to arrest him with the good graces of the court.
Okay, so let me follow this again one more time. Here is that then again, he filed on the judge? Is that what you're saying?
The motion for curative instruction about gunplay in court was filed with federal district court.
Okay, so in other words, you were using these criminal offenses against the court officials.
Not at that point.
Okay.
He had simply said, it must be crime. I want to arrest these guys. Your Honor, instruct me on how to do that.
Okay.
And then a month and a half later or so, the judge denied the motion.
Okay.
And so by that time, we had complained in superior court of felonies and asked to impanel a grand jury, and we joined the federal district court chief judge to that criminal complaint.
Okay. All right. I follow you. Okay.
So I was as belligerent as he would let me be.
Uh-huh.
It was the defendant's case, so he had final approval on all the language of all the pleadings. And the whole case is right here.
Okay.
And down below, you see the superior court documents, PDF scanned with court stamps on them and everything. And we got nowhere with the law except he wasn't indicted.
Okay, and so that's what your point was, is just to prevent that from happening.
They'll take your money.
Yeah. And so if you can stay away from being indicted, then what all does that avoid for them?
I advise everybody, stay in the system. Look at the deviants you're inviting into your life by not doing what the IRS says. But when you know you're in the IRS's good graces, if I were you, because you should be an American about this, I got an idea. Why don't you look at the amount you pay to the IRS? You know it's not taxes. Why don't you look at it as the price of admission to the shouting match? Pick up your damn bullhorn and verbally assail your congressman.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, get to the bottom of this or get these felons away from me. I look forward to your response within 10 days. And you file a bunch of evidence behind it, as you see right off of my page if you want. All the documents are right there saying, look what they can't deny here. They can't deny it over there. They can't deny it over there. They're sending people to prison. They can't deny a thing. The president knows he can't deny a thing. I've joined the presidential complaint with course number 7 from Dave. And you complain in style right to your congressman. Crawl right up their skirt. You know they can't deny a thing. The DOJ can't. Obama can't. And start a fight once you know you're in their good graces. So it's the best you can do. I'm on the front lines doing more than that, but I know all of this, and I don't expect you to get to that point. So keep the deviants out of your life and leave the hardball to other people, but you can be an activist once you know that they have to leave you alone. Excuse me.
Well, you know, one of the things you brought up that your friend Craig was observing in courtrooms. So if people sat in courtrooms and started watching what was going on more, they would learn a lot just in that, and then if they could follow it up with learning the criminal code and following what you have to say, if you know, they might be able to. I mean, once they're knowing that they're being watched, wouldn't that make a lot of effect? Possibly, or can they just?
I personally, and I can't give legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
I personally wouldn't wait until they're active against me or thinking about me or dreaming about me. I would join the presidential complaint yesterday. It's the first thing I would do. Look at the Irene Kuglin criminal case, the John Cheek criminal case, Joe Bannister. They say that these people have a record of approaching the IRS demanding that they show their authority and statements to the effect that they don't believe the IRS has authority over them. They have a record established. I look at those successes by people who got out of their criminal charges a certain way, and I say, building a record's for me. It got these people off of the charges. I go back to 1992 when I got a centralized authorization file number from the IRS as an unenrolled tax return preparer. I wanted to be one. That's why I got into this. I wanted to go from bartending to something nice and quiet during the day. And look what it got me into. Yeah, here I get a life.
It's in your nature. No.
And she laughs at me. No.
Not at you.
I know. Anyway, then I found these discrepancies between standard operating procedure and statute. And I asked some of my prospective clients, do you want to go to tax court and accuse them of it? And they said, yeah. So a bunch of people filed a boilerplate brief. Five people appealed to the federal level, four of those to the Supreme Court. Another litigant came up through a state tax court, state Supreme Court, to the U.S. Supreme Court. And out of those five, two of them were docketed, the ones that argued only Section 83.
What does docketed mean?
Means it made it past the clerks who have veto power in the Supreme Court. Most are rejected by the clerks themselves, and only a few hundred make it past them to the justices for final determination as to whether or not they'll be heard.
So is that kind of a willy-nilly thing, or is...
Oh, to get docketed? It's the Supreme Court. They get 7,000 to 9,000 petitions a year, I've heard, and they only hear how many?
Not very many.
So they can't be forced to review 1,000 petitions. The clerks have to veto a vast majority of those, and I made it through twice. So I walk the walk. I've been there. Lowell Beecraft is a beginner. Tom Cryer is a beginner. Five times before the end of 98, I had written five Supreme Court petitions. Two of them were docketed. So I've done the work, and I know this inside and out. My nickname is Data. I didn't pick that. And I can accidentally give a tax seminar.
So when you're saying that these guys don't read, how did they come up with schemes or whatever, and not even have read the codes to even, they just pick something out of a book and say, well, I'm going to, out of the law or codes or whatever, and that they don't read the whole thing to...
It goes back to my comment about their lack of respect for a document as complex as the tax code. And I had a learning curve that was like so. I was working 8 hours a day for an employer and studying the tax code 2 hours a day afterward. Then I got the job full-time of trying to help people out of 1040 NR penalties, frivolous filing penalties, to where I could do tax law 10 hours a day. When I did that, the accumulated knowledge over the past 3 or 4 years of study, the tax code organized itself right in front of me based on maxims of law, big standards you can always rely on. It organized itself right in front of me when I was able to think about it in depth, nonstop, for many hours per day. And then I decided to ignore the Patriot Movement, went right back to the code, found Section 83, and I screeched to a halt going, excuse me, if this applies to me, it's not being enforced. If it applies to all wages, it applies to wages in FICA, which is an income tax. It applies to self-employment earnings in Chapter 2, which is an income tax. Social Security is an income tax. Section 83 applies to all compensation. That means it applies to 3121A wages, 3121Q, tips, in FICA. It applies to your wages in 3306, in Chapter 23, Federal Unemployment Tax Act, and it applies to Social Security in Chapter 2, Self-Employed. I've never been contradicted on that either. They're all income taxes. Section 83 explains how property received in exchange for services is taxed.
Okay, so let me follow this one. Okay, so if you're already being taxed, then they're trying to tax...
Double chapter taxation.
Okay, that's what I thought.
They do Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 against you for the self-employed. They do Chapters 1, 21, and 23 against you if you're an employee. They collect this through Chapter 24 W-4 form. Chapter 24 does not impose a rate of tax. It imposes a method of withholding. So the tax has to be imposed elsewhere, and they withhold it through the W-4 form.
So what I think I'm hearing you say is like that movie, Freedom to Fascism, when they were talking about that they didn't answer them about the law. Are you kind of saying that that's not true then?
Here's where I am the opposite of the Patriot Movement. Over there we have Bob Schultz. We the people. We got a board of experts. We got Sherry Jackson this. We got Joe Bannister that. And we've got 537 questions. You've seen their list of questions?
No.
It's an expose on show me the law. Show me the law. They have 537 questions. Tell me, do you go to experts for questions or for answers?
Okay.
They're still saying, show me the law. I'm saying, excuse me, here's the law, you violated it, and they can't deny it, the DOJ. So I'm at the opposite end of the learning curve from anybody that says, show me the law that gives you the authority. I just showed you the law. Regulation 1.1-1, they wrote that to bring the tax code into the 50 states, and then they ignored the definition of citizen in these chapters and refused to let those definitions operate. And therefore, this is a rebellion and insurrection. This is a seditious conspiracy, 18 U.S.C. 2383 and 2384. This is what the crime is committed when they write policy from the bench, where she goes, I know, I shouldn't say that, I know, and I don't advocate that, I'm not saying you should do that, we don't write law from the bench. That's an admission that they write law from the bench and they hinder or prevent the execution of laws of the United States. Those are the essential elements of those two criminal statutes I just cited. They commit crimes by legislating from the bench. If you know your criminal code, you see government in an entirely different light. And so she has admitted in that Duke University tape that the appellate level is a seditious conspiracy. It is a rebellion and insurrection, and I've got case after case after case that proves the law has been set aside. So I will be mailing my Sonia Sotomayor criminal complaint to the Senate Confirmation Committee.
I thought that was what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, and then I'm going to serve that complaint on the U.S. Supreme Court and ask that they act to have her thrown in prison for it. And then the Supreme Court is going to know if Dave Merland ever petitions the Supreme Court, one of the justices has to disqualify herself if we let Sotomayor to this court. And anybody that joins Dave's complaint to the Supreme Court against her, they will have the ability to bar her from participation in any case that reaches this court. Isn't that funny?
But you obviously had to have affected a number of people. Do you have any really good students out there that have really picked up on what you're doing.
Yeah, Melody Gillespie in California is doing the best with the California code that somebody can do. It's a terrible code to begin with, but she got my courses 2.5 years ago, a little more. And
didn't she do a radio program?
Yeah, she's on.
No, you know what's interesting
this is your
is
show. I didn't want to just take the liberty of mentioning her show.
Oh, I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, firstamendmentradio.com. Spell it out, F-I-R-S-T. Firstamendmentradio.com, 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific on Sunday evenings. 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific, Mel's Bar and Grill.
Okay, right.
On Sundays.
Right.
She's a wonderful lady. She's just a nice sweetheart, and I call her the axe murderer because now she has criminal complaining in her blood, and she's not even taking prisoners. And well, she'll tell you stories about how she's turning courts around. You ought to have her on your show. She's great.
You know, and now what is it with the group, the rule, I'm trying to remember because it's not an easy name, is this affiliated with you, the Michael Edwards?
Your Remedy is in the law.com was my promoter until December.
Okay.
And now I have another promoter.
Okay. Now, they do, like, conference calls and that sort. Now, what does that tie in with your type of work?
I have no idea what he does. I know that he's impressed with my strategies, and this is just the system. Anybody's welcome to talk about what I do.
Right.
So he's probably still talking about a lot of my tactics.
Okay, so in other words, he was also practicing. He wasn't just a promoter then. He was practicing some of the tactics.
I don't know what he personally is doing, but he's more of a promoter and networker than he is a litigator.
Okay.
And he attracts people to his product line.
Okay.
And references offensive strategies that I teach.
Okay.
No big deal.
Okay. So, and you're saying the Melody, and anybody else besides Melody Gillespie that...
No, really. I got a real tight circle of people that impress me, and she's one of them.
Okay.
And she's wonderful. She's just a sweetheart.
And but again, you still have to have people that have used your site and your process to their advantage, whether they tried to make it a occupation or
yeah, and it's not everybody that'll reach a level where they can help themselves. And so a lot of this is helping people on fire that don't really follow through with being a student. But there are a few people that have picked this up and are learning more and more and are very excited about it. But they're few and far between because of the, you know, you have to acquaint yourself with the law, and you have to do it after working all day for somebody else. And you got a life, you got kids, I understand. So, the students are few and far between, but I'm pure code pleading, and the students that I do acquire end up doing well, walking the walk and getting some respect.
Well, you know, and listening between what the way you're going about it, and I definitely I'll try to key in more with what you're doing, and listening to what I like hearing about Randy in his respect is he's. I mean, Texas is notorious in its own right for its own infractions.
No, Texas needs Randy.
Yeah, and he's just going after all the courts, with the way the penal system has gotten to be in this country, it's like our number one gross national product, from what I understand.
Sure, and you chip away at what they do. Criminal complaint here, criminal complaint there. They don't bring me into their courts. And I really don't take individual cases. My plate is full right now. But, you know, you do what you can, and you try to, you know, you limit the loss of liberty wherever you can. You leave it up to the defendant how much they want to get out of this. Do you want to just get out of court and pay a fine, or do you really want to max these people out? If they want to just get out of the pressure, that's their business. Let's go for that as our goal. And it's always about their liberty, and it's never about me. So, first things first, what does the defendant want?
Right.
And I pursue that. So, there are little victories and there are big ones. You listen to the small claims, you're going to have a fun time with jurisinformatics.com. The small claims page is just a riot. There's the gold and silver page where this guy asked if the judge was committing a bunch of crimes by accepting Federal Reserve notes to pay that fine he paid.
Yeah, I thought that was
rather than speak about the argument as briefed, and he wasn't even asked to vacate the case. The judge vacated a guilty plea on solicitation of a prostitute rather than talk about it as I briefed it under criminal statutes. And then there's
cool stuff on there, Dave.
Go ahead.
Can we have you speculate what would be the best possible application of your knowledge? I mean, I know you have like people can join in this presidential
declaratory judgments and initiatives.
But I mean, as far as like, you know, the Patriot thing turns into a movement, right? And yours is very focused on the individual, like you say.
However, the individual, I said, this learning curve, if it can stand in the way of a lot of people, if you did these other two things, initiatives, petition for declaratory judgment in Superior Court. Get an attorney. The declaratory judgment is the key to the court. When there's a controversy under any statute, ordinance, or contract, you have the right to petition the court to declare your rights in relation to that. So I would go to court. Here's an example of a declaratory judgment that we're going to be moving for a summary judgment on pretty soon. A gentleman has produced notes to pay bills. You're aware of the notes idea that's circulating out there. He paid these creditors with notes, promissory notes, which he sought to pay off the debt with. They didn't return the note, and they pursued the judgment for what he didn't pay him in cash. Well, we've asked federal district court to declare three things in relation to those notes that are sitting out in the hands of many debtors of this guy, or creditors. Number one, the notes are securities as defined by 15 U.S.C. 77B in the Securities Act. Number two, that when a party, when a creditor, when somebody receives a note, if they intend to not accept the note, they have but one choice, and that is to formally dishonor it under UCC 3-502. It's a process. They have to return it to you and say why, whatever. And number three, I want the court to declare that the note shall be deemed accepted if it has not been formally dishonored in 30 days. So he's got all these creditors out there with notes that they kept and sued him for the money. And when I win that one, he's going to get probably several hundred thousand dollars back and save a whole bunch more. This is a wealthy businessman. And everybody out there who has a note that they paid with and the creditor kept the note, you'll have remedy through one declaratory judgment from a federal court. Everybody will have remedy. See how I did that with just one action? If I didn't ask for a declaratory judgment, everybody's on their own by a case-by-case basis, and they might not win.
So in other words, you're setting precedent.
It's like the gifting clubs. They should have gone to federal district court for a declaratory judgment, one thing that says you're exercising federal constitutional rights. There, all 50 states are covered.
What?
So you ask the state to put its authority behind a judgment, saying this is a declaratory judgment. Anytime this instance comes up, you can count on this case.
I actually thought those giftings.
And it didn't take a learning curve. You hire an attorney, you get a specific question, and you ask them, "I want a declaratory judgment that says this is unlawful here." Another one is initiatives. Okay, the state has the authority to tax income. However, we're going to write the definition of income, and we're going to put an initiative on the ballot that says when we sell our labor in an arm's-length transaction, everything we receive from this unrelated party is in the category of cost and shall never be deemed to be profit or gross income. So we just defined income for the legislature. Now you go tax that income.
Okay.
I didn't receive any. My friends didn't receive any. You go find someone that did. There, you just solve state income tax with a state law that defines cost and income.
Okay, now I'm following what you're saying here.
I've written tons of statutes. Look at noconfidence.com right now on there. It's a splash page, pages under construction, or the site. And I have my response to California Senate Bill 572. I wrote the Pedophile Free School Zone Act. And I wrote that preamble and that statute and emailed it to some of the opposers of the bill, and they immediately emailed it to like 12 of the sponsors of that bill for a Harvey Milk Day in kindergarten. And it calls what they did a sex crime. And we're going to lay it down here. You don't talk to a child about sex until they're 11 and only after the parent consents. And you will never, you're barred from mentioning or referencing homosexuality. The campus shall be at all times void of references, depictions, or anything concerning homosexuality. I went totally to the other side with that statute. There's an example.
Wow.
How do you like me now? Abolish rap because a child is a terrible thing to waste. There's another statute I wrote. To regulate rap as if it was porn. 18 and over, period. There's a lot of people that have no business communicating with a child, and they're doing it anyway. Hey, it's your show, top of the hour. What are we doing?
Well, and I was going to say thank you very much for coming on the program, Dave.
Oh, this is my pleasure. Do it again, all right?
Oh, I certainly will. And any closing comments or anything? Or
When we're off of the air, if you have to call me back, that's fine. If you don't have to call me back when we're off the air, I can give you Kurt Riggins' contact information. You really got to talk to this guy. He's great.
Okay, well, can I just email you, or do you have...
Sure, that's fine, too.
Okay, I'll just do that, because that way I'll keep it
okay,
organized.
Melody. Okay, Shannon.
Okay,
hey, thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, and please, do this again.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you guys, good night.
Good night.
Good night.